Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
Well, I wasn't going to do a podcast this week. I was releasing some other stuff, and I was kind of taking a break during this rather loose December month, you know, the holiday month with so much else going on. But I am releasing today a video to YouTube, which is a conversation I'd had with a YouTube activist named Steve Shives. And Steve's been on the radio with me before. We recorded the conversation a while back, and I'm just now getting it edited and released. And it was about a 30-minute chat. And listening to it, I thought, well, maybe the radio audience would like to hear the exchange. Instead of having no broadcast at all, maybe they'd enjoy at least a half an hour listening to a couple of heathens just sit back and chat. And that's kind of what tonight's broadcast is going to be. So not a big show, not a long show, not an award-winning show, but a show nonetheless. And then next Tuesday night, we're going to talk about unusual Christmas traditions. Beyond Santa and the reindeer, beyond Frosty the Snowman, beyond nativity scenes and Christmas turkey and Bing Crosby's White Christmas and the stuff that we normally do every single year. This is stuff from around the world, traditions that you may not have heard of that are just wild. Many of them are bizarre and a little bit alarming, but they do them on Christmas. I thought it would make for an entertaining broadcast. So next Tuesday night, we're going to talk about strange and unusual Christmas traditions from around the world. And we're going to take Christmas week off at the end of December. It's our year in review show. The biggest news, the most noteworthy events of 2015 will kind of recap the last 12 months. I'm looking ahead to January. It looks like I'm going to get Dr. Michael Shermer back on the radio. And what brought this to light is that we've been watching things like Dr. Ben Carson, right? The neurosurgeon of Johns Hopkins, who is a Republican presidential candidate. And the guy's got to be wicked smart to do what he does. He's a brain surgeon. At the same time, he asserts things like the Egyptian pyramids were created so that Joseph would have a place to store grain, like the biblical Joseph. He believes, and I think he asserted this just a few days ago, that there's a Star of David hidden on the back of American money. And there's no proof of this whatsoever. There's no evidence of any Star of David. What's he looking at? How does a neurosurgeon come up with such batshit crazy ideas? And it takes me back to Michael Shermer's book that I'm rereading. I'm just about finished rereading it, Why People Believe Weird Things. And so I'm going to do a broadcast along these lines. How do otherwise smart people, and we all know people who make really smart decisions and they're really rational in every other area of their lives. Hell, maybe we've been those people. But in one or two areas, there's no rationality whatsoever. We are completely irrational. We embrace crazy, stupid stuff. In fact, I'm thinking about calling the show something like Why Smart People Think Stupid Things, or Smart People, Stupid Stuff. A lot of people get strange about using the word stupid. I'm not opposed to it in the context of ideas. There are a lot of stupid ideas out there. Just stupid. I mean, the Egyptian pyramids idea is stupid. I'd also like to include in that broadcast your own examples of times in your life when you believed something that you now look at and you think, God, that was really stupid. I mean, when I was a believer especially, I had a lot of stupid ideas. I used to believe some strange stuff. We did a kind of a game show for Bo Bennett's broadcast. He did a podcast down in Florida at the Florida Freethought event, and he actually included a section in the show, which was brilliant. And he had people in the audience walk up to the microphone and talk about one thing that they used to believe that was irrational and possibly insane, but they believed it with all their heart at some point in their life. And people came up with all kinds of conspiracies and strange things. And I included one of my own stories as well. An irrational thing that I used to believe, and this is absolutely true, When I was a young Christian, we were in the middle of the satanic panic of the 1980s where everything was of the devil, you know. And we were taught, and for a very short window of time, I believed that the rock band Kiss, that their name, the letters in the name Kiss, stood for Knights in Satan's Service. We believed that they were agents of Beelzebub here on Earth. Now, I was a kid, but I believed it, and it was really, really stupid. That's the kind of stuff I'd like to talk about. So if you used to believe something kind of insane and way out there, tell me that story. Send me an email to podcast@thethinkingatheist.com. And we'll queue up some of those and highlight them probably mid-January on that broadcast with Dr. Michael Shermer. But anyway, let's get on with tonight's broadcast. This is a short exchange between myself and Steve Shive. Steve is an atheist activist and a YouTube producer. He produces irreverent videos that commonly address religious claims and apologetics and a whole lot more. The YouTube channel is Steve Likes to Curse, and it's the number two, not the word two. So if you're curious, Steve Likes to Curse, or just go to Steve Shives on YouTube. And this is our exchange, which took place at the Pennsylvania State Atheist Humanist Conference in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Talk to me about the apologists. You have a lot of fun with the apologists. You have a favorite? Somebody you especially enjoy going after?
Especially enjoy going after? The one that probably felt the best to actually go after was Ray Comfort, just because he has such a high profile, and because it was when I did two of his books, and other than that, I wasn't familiar with him other than just seeing clips of him on YouTube, or maybe occasionally watching like an episode of his Way of the Master show.
Now, what do you mean by you did two of his books? I do
a YouTube series called An Atheist Reads, where I sort of teach the book in like a lecture sort of style, but from an atheist perspective. So if they're making scientific arguments, you know, are the arguments correct? Are the arguments incorrect? If they're incorrect, why? Are they making claims or saying things that I don't agree with? If so, why? And it's designed to give people who are non-believers, who maybe have these books sort of pushed in front of them by their relatives, saying, here, just read this, maybe this will help, you know, to give them an idea of what they could say. Because the first time I started encountering apologetics, I was given a copy of The Case for Christ by my girlfriend at the time. And she said, just read this and let's talk about it. Because she was a Christian, and I was not yet identifying as an atheist, but I was sort of moving in that direction. And she said, just read this and we'll talk about it. And I read the whole book, and it didn't seem right to me. It wasn't persuasive, but I couldn't put my finger on exactly what it was that I didn't, that was wrong with it. And then I came back to that same book many years later when I started doing YouTube stuff, and that was the first book I did an Atheist Read series for. And it's basically just reading the book a chapter at a time, or maybe a couple of chapters at a time if they're short chapters, and reviewing the content and explaining why I disagree with it, you know, if I disagree with it, which I almost always do. And for Ray Comfort, I did two books in a single series because his books are kind of short. And it was satisfying because it was one of those moments where you feel validated for, you know, now that you haven't been unfair to him, you know, because he gets such a bad rap from so many people. They say, oh, Ray's, his arguments are so bad and he's so dishonest. And I still stop short of saying he's dishonest because I can't read his mind. But when you read his own words and you realize, oh, this is really him. Like, he hasn't been unfairly, you know, he hasn't been mischaracterized. This is actually the guy. And that felt, it was like, oh, good. I haven't horribly misjudged somebody.
Well, some people think he's just a charlatan. He's just, you know, but you're right. Who knows? He may indeed be a true believer. He may have bought it hook, line, and sinker, right?
And really, the revelation for me doing these apologist books, I've done 13 of them now altogether, and the revelation for me is that, to me personally, it really doesn't matter whether they are true believers or whether they're consciously just lying to people to tell people what they want to hear. Because either way, they're spreading misinformation and they're giving their own faith a bad rap, because I know plenty of Christians who are nothing like the Ray Comforts of the world, or, you know, and even the more respectable apologists like William Lane Craig or Lee Strobel or Josh McDowell. I mean, these are sort of considered like the more respectable members of the
popular... Qualify respectable. I mean, William Lane Craig is respectable.
Yeah, he's respectable within... don't you find it funny the way Craig is spoken of sometimes in certain Christian circles, like with a kind of awe? Like, he's our guy. He's our best guy.
He's the top tier. He's the PhD. He's our A-team for many of those people.
And that was another one. I did one of his books. I did Reasonable Faith. And I've never taken a philosophy course. My education is in English, so I'm not equipped. You know, I'm standing on the shoulders of others and relying on the expertise of people who actually know what they're talking about when I'm having to engage with like scientific claims or really deep philosophical stuff. But even I could tell that most of what Craig was saying it wasn't doing the same things that he says it's doing. He makes these arguments as though they're these airtight, inescapable, logical conclusions. And if you look at them one piece at a time, it's like, wait a minute, that's not what that makes no sense. I think you've even made that point. Like, it's gobbledygook. It sounds good, but when you think about it, like, wait a minute, he says that this implies that, but these two things have nothing to do with each other.
And at the end of the day, you have to ask yourself why a benevolent deity would require an apologist on earth to explain what he really means. Why would a benevolent deity need William Lane Craig or Ray Comfort or any of the millions of people championing their particular religions on the internet? Yeah. And he could part the curtain of the sky at any moment. And yet this doesn't seem to occur to a lot of people. They're happy to send their gladiators into battle to defend the king, kind of thing.
Yeah. They have this, they've created this little drama where, and if you push too hard, I guess they would be forced to just admit, well, this is just the way God wants it, for whatever reason. You know, if God wanted to, he could reveal himself to everybody instead of to just a few people here and there. But he just doesn't want to do it that way. His part of his perfect plan is to reveal his will and have himself glorified through us. And that's okay with them. To someone like me, it's like just what you said. But that doesn't make sense. If he's all powerful and he really cares whether or not we believe in him, then he's the one who has the responsibility to be convincing us, not his soldiers, as they sometimes actually even refer to themselves, which is a little crazy, but with these terrible arguments and these terrible evidence. I got to a point doing apologist books where I actually started to feel bad for them, because they really do have the conviction of what they're doing, or at least they seem to, but they just have nothing to work with. And you start to think, like, man, if there is a God, he really owes these guys an apology, because he's really left them hung out to dry. He could have given them so much more. It's so much easier, even just as an atheist, to imagine better evidence that God could have given. It wouldn't have been conclusive. You know, it's hard to imagine a particular argument or a particular piece of evidence that you would see it and you would automatically just be convinced from a state of total unbelief. But he could have given them a lot more than he has. You know?
Let's talk about the angry atheist narrative.
Okay.
In activism, we find people of all ilks. And the story goes that, well, there's room for all styles. There's room for all voices. Right. You've got the diplomat. You've got the firebrand. You've got someone over here who's the peacemaker and someone over here who's the asshole. Right? Mm. And there's room for us all. And I struggle with that just a little bit, because while anger has its place, I think if you lead all the time with rage and you're an idiot, you're a moron, you're a dumbass, those types of things, I think, are we really then going to be effective in changing minds? Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on effectiveness as activism sort of moves forward?
I am very sympathetic to that thought of, well, all voices should be welcome. And if somebody's angry, they should be allowed to be angry. And if somebody wants to be more diplomatic and more cooperative, they should be allowed to do that. But at the same time, I do worry a lot, especially in the little corner of the atheist community that I'm most active in, the YouTube part of it, how many of those really angry voices are just pushing people out. or pushing people away. Because I hear from people on my channel a lot, usually in private messages, because they don't want to leave comments because they're afraid. Even on my channel where I try to moderate comments, they know from past experience that if they say something that a certain group of YouTube atheist types don't like, that they will be swarmed and they will be attacked. And some people, that's like water off a duck's back. And for other people, it really bothers them to be attacked in a comment section. And I'm respectful of that. And so many people have said to me, I would do more. I would leave comments more often. I would make videos of my own. But I don't want to invite that abuse. And that troubles me. It's one thing to say, well, yeah, if so-and-so wants to make YouTube videos about atheism and he just wants to be angry and just attack religion and call religious people mentally ill and just do nothing but do takedown videos and pwnage videos, why shouldn't he be allowed to do that? And I say he should be allowed to do that. I'm not saying we should stop him from doing that, but I worry about that being the dominant face of a section of our movement that for many people is their first point of contact with popular atheism. Many people say that, aside from the giants, like the best-selling authors like Dawkins or Hitchens or Harris, it might be an atheist YouTuber who is their first person they see on a screen talking about why a particular religious belief is false or why they are an atheist or whatever. And I worry about that angry, divisive voice being the voice that so many people who are new to the movement experience for the first time.
The challenge you and I have and so many others have is that anger has a place.
Absolutely.
There's a good opportunity everywhere we look to see the damage religion does. We should be angry about it. You know, Greta's done the book and the speech on Why Are You Atheists So Angry? And When I was a believer, if I had started to have doubts and I wanted to be part of the conversation to learn more and I'd stumbled upon a site, a book, a blog, a YouTube, whatever, with someone, and they led with, all right, you creationist dumbasses, you religiotards, you morons, study your evolutionary biology, study your history. What's the matter with you? I mean, if they had led with that, I would have probably just blanched and stepped out of the conversation altogether. I would have felt like the other, right? I was the out group. I wasn't really welcome. I was inferior, being told I was inferior, and I might have walked away from the conversation. And this is the challenge we face, I think, with those tactics, right?
Yeah, there are certainly places for indignation and for anger. But if all you ever do, if the dominant tone of our community when we're talking about people outside of our community is always anger and resentment and ridicule and condescension, then we're losing sight of the fact that we still have to live with other people. You know, as far as I know, the end game has never been, let's convert everybody to atheism and then we'll all be happy. The idea is we want our own equal place among the plurality.
And be nice to see rationalism win the day.
Of course it would. Yeah, but in the meantime, it would be nice if we could just get along and we could be non-believers of whatever identity we choose, and they could be religious believers of whatever identity they fall into, and we're not forcing anything on anybody else, and we're just under the law at least, and hopefully culturally we get along.
So you're not acquiescing to false claims. You're not saying,
no,
all faiths are welcome.
Not at all.
All belief systems are on an equal playing field. You're not making that statement.
No, I think it's very important to challenge false beliefs, and I'm a big believer in the idea of, you know, religion shouldn't be exempt from criticism or examination, because that's what has gotten us to this point in the first place, where there are so many Americans who sincerely believe that this is a Christian nation, not just demographically, but legally. Like, this was founded as an explicitly Christian nation, which just isn't true. We've always been a Christian nation demographically. We've always had mostly Christians living here. But in terms of our form of government, it was never intended to be a theocratic form.
Yeah, supporting someone's right to hold an individual religious belief doesn't insulate them from criticism.
No, not at all. But the challenge is finding that balance where you are challenging their belief and you are standing up for your own position, which is mostly what I try to do when people say, like, you know, what's the point of reviewing apologist books? And part of it, in addition to what I told you earlier, is just putting an atheist position out there, just saying, okay, here's what the author of this book said. Here's what I, just as an atheist, thinks. And it's not meant to be definitive or comprehensive, but this is just what I think. And if all we're doing is attacking people and ridiculing people and treating people, assuming that people are unintelligent, because I mean, some people are ignorant, some people don't know what evolution really says. Some people do have a lack of knowledge as far as scientific arguments. Some people are like me and don't know anything about philosophy, but yet they speak as though they do. They make philosophical arguments as though they really understand them. But not everybody's like that. There are lots of people who are deeply religious who are also very intelligent and very thoughtful people, and we just happen to disagree. And it doesn't mean that you shouldn't address them or you should shy away from them. Or you should feel bashful about speaking up if you think they're out of line in some way. But if all we're doing is attacking people, and a lot of YouTube atheists who take that tactic say, well, they don't deserve respect. You know, they don't. I don't have to be nice to them. I don't have to be respectful to them. And that's true. You don't have to. But recognize that you're part of a group of people who are asking for a particular measure of respect from those people. And you're not saying, well, you have to respect the fact that I'm an atheist and you have to profess how much you love the fact that I don't believe in God. But you have to respect me the same way you respect members of your own faith. You have to respect me having the same rights as you have. You have to respect me being able to have an equal voice in our community, our shared community, as you have as a Christian or whatever you happen to be. And if our image is, well, they're just a bunch of angry atheists and they hate religious people, that's counterproductive.
And those are two different things.
Yeah.
I mean, being justifiably angry about something and being a hateful person are two different things. Well, this is, of course, the point where someone says, well, you're not going to tell me how to behave. I already left one flock, right? I have a constitutional right, a human right to be an asshole.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to go be an asshole and you won't tell me how to behave. You know, I don't worry about what other people think about me.
Right.
I struggle with that a little bit because we aren't islands unto ourselves, largely. What we do does ripple outward.
Yeah.
Do we genuinely care about helping other people, or is it enough just to be right? And this is a question that I think pops up from time to time, mm-hmm. especially in comment sections, right?
Oh, yeah. There are people who have told me, and I'm sure you've heard this before too, they have actually said there is no atheist community, or there is no atheist movement. And I wonder what these people are even talking about. I mean, we are sitting here right now at a conference where there have been hundreds of atheists all over, you know, from all parts of the country who have come here to meet each other and to hear talks and to engage in what I don't know what you could call it other than a community. We're brought together by a common thing, a common characteristic, common interests. This is a community. And you can be an atheist and shun that community or show no interest in that community, and that's fine. I don't begrudge people who are atheists who don't feel like they want to go to conferences or make videos or even talk about it. If the only place you think about the fact that you're an atheist is in your own mind and that's enough for you, that's great. But people who begrudge other people the community and the activism and the movement and say things like, you know, there is no atheist movement, baffle me. And when they say things like, I'm entitled to be an asshole, you're right. Sometimes I'm an asshole. I'm an asshole a lot, especially when I'm not on camera. But realize that if you're an atheist and you're being an asshole and you're tying your atheism into the fact that you're also being an abusive jerk, you are, whether you like it or not, you're a member of a community that in many ways has been marginalized and disenfranchised. And you are making it worse for people like you.
You're making it easier for other people to misrepresent us out there in the arena of ideas.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that you should have this responsibility imposed on you. It doesn't mean that people should be coming up behind you and tapping you on the shoulder and saying, hey, knock it off.
Straighten up, yeah.
But just have a little bit of self-awareness, you know?
How much do you read the comment sections?
I read them a little bit. What I usually do is I read them a lot in the first day or two after a video goes up, and then I kind of forget about it.
To make sure you didn't miss something?
Yeah. Well, because I attract a lot of attention from certain internet groups that have a tendency to leave really abusive comments or trolling comments. And I try to get those out. I try to keep my comment sections as clear of those as I can.
So you actually delete comments and probably take a lot of shit for it, right? You're abridging my free speech rights.
Yeah.
My voice shall not be quelled.
Yeah, and they say you're creating an echo chamber, which is funny to me because if you look at any of my videos that have those comments that have, you know, a lot of disagreement. And it's basically, you can always tell an atheist video that's going to get a lot of dislikes if the person on the video says something supportive of women. You're going to get tons of dislikes and tons of negative comments.
And they use specific language to do so.
Yeah. Yeah. So for people who are of that mentality, yeah, they're the free speech type people who are like, you know, what about our right to speak? And, you know.
Now, wait a minute. Are you deleting all contradictory opinions and sources of disagreement, because disagreement is good.
Right. And in the comment sections of those videos, I defy anyone to look at those comments and say that it's just people who agree with me. There, even in those comment sections where I've really heavily curated it and removed comments and banned people who have been abusive or have just posted they post boilerplate talking points that are not doing anything to advance any sort of conversation. Even in those comment sections where I have taken a very heavy hand, it's more people who disagree with me than agree with me, you know. So the idea.
So it's not you have a contradictory position,
right,
therefore you're out.
No.
It's you're cutting and pasting sort of parroted talking points, and you're suffocating the thread, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or what?
And there are certain, and it's subjective. I know I've been involved in it enough that you kind of develop an ear for it. Like there's a way of trying to start a conversation that seems innocent. But then once you get the hook in, you start with the more more problematic stuff. And if I sort of catch a whiff of that, and if it's someone that I don't know, then I don't lose any sleep over removing that comment, because I figure this isn't going to help. This isn't going to be productive. They're not even really talking about anything that I mentioned in the video, you know. So it is subjective. It is ultimately me making a judgment. And sometimes I might err a little too far on the side of, I just want to get rid of someone who looks like they might be a problem. And maybe if I had let them go a little bit, it would have turned out they would have been okay. But the thing is, it's the internet. For those types of videos, I get thousands of comments, and it's hard to keep up with. And if I do happen to remove a comment from someone who actually didn't mean any harm, I feel bad about that. But at the same time, I can't really lose sleep over that, because the problem that has led me to do that in the first place is a real problem. And it's something that I hear about from people all the time.
There'll be someone from time to time on the social media page on Facebook or whatnot, they'll come in and say something abusive.
Yeah.
It's outright abusive. And they wrap it around some point or critique, or, I mean, they're obviously, they show up with an agenda of some kind. They're trying to say something, but they say it so toxically, you know.
Yeah.
And they get banned.
Yeah.
Because the needs of the many, right, outweigh
Absolutely.
The needs of the few. You don't want the community as a whole to have to suffer through these interruptions and all of these distractions.
Right.
That's why theist drive-bys. If someone comes by my site and they've got a question, a legitimate question, wonderful, welcome.
Mm-hmm.
If someone comes by to do some kind of a drive-by seminar posting that says you'll all burn in hell, it's easy to ban them, because
Absolutely.
The community doesn't exist for them. This page doesn't exist for them. I don't have an obligation to listen or appease them.
No.
And the YouTube pages are often the same way. You get to determine the temperature that you want for the page. And if people don't like that, plenty of pages out there, right?
Absolutely. And if the trolls and the abusive people and the people who are just there trying to bait people or derail what would be the legitimate conversation are the ones who are allowed to control the conversation, then you're not serving that community. I mean, I don't make YouTube videos for trolls. I don't make YouTube videos to pick fights with people or to get into, you know, one-on-one arguments with people about stuff that to me isn't controversial. I mean, if you have an argument to make about something that is up for grabs, that is debatable, then I would love to have that debate. But most of the things that I get the angriest comments about are things that outside of a small little bubble of people are utterly uncontroversial. You know, the notion that women's rights is still an important thing to be stood up for. That's utterly uncontroversial outside of a relatively small but incredibly vocal sphere of people who are mostly active on the internet. And so when people challenge you to a debate on that, when people challenge you to a debate on, well, I would like to debate with you whether feminism is still a legitimate movement. That's like debating whether or not evolution is a legitimate biological theory.
I'm sorry you're so religious about feminism.
Yeah,
Steve.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's another. I love.
When sorry you can be so skeptical about everything else in your life, but you're not on this subject, Steve.
You've heard that too.
Yeah.
Which tells far more about the person making that comment than it does about me, because if you really think that feminism is equatable to a religion, and religion is typically defined as being based at least in part on divine revelation and these dogmatic principles. Anyone who thinks that you need to have a divine revelation to accept that gender inequality exists and that it disadvantages women almost all of the time, or if you think that feminists as a group are dogmatic people, that's so hilarious.
There are some dogmatic. Vitriolic, poisonous. I mean, I would not want to associate with them. I find them wholly unpleasant. The kicker is, I don't allow them to define feminism for me.
Exactly. And yeah, there are individuals, as there are in most communities, there are individuals who are dogmatic, who are caustic, who are probably doing their movement just as much of a disservice as the angry atheists I was complaining about.
Or building another agenda on top of the feminist label, right?
Right. But feminists as a group, in my experience, are an incredibly diverse group of people, and they argue with each other all the time. So this idea that it's a fundamentalist religious movement where it's just everybody in lockstep is preposterous, and it shows that they really don't have any familiarity with the thing that they are so afraid of, and that they're spewing so much hatred towards.
So you and I, as middle class white American men, are told that middle class white American men are the oppressed minority or whatever.
Yeah.
We have to look at each other and say, on what planet
exactly
are we talking? Do you think that the label matters? Egalitarian, humanist, humanitarian, feminist?
I would call myself a humanist and a feminist. I think they go together. I would hesitate to call myself a humanist when we're talking about gender inequality, because I think feminism is a more specific term. I think humanism, I generally think of humanism as a broader sort of, you know, outlook. I would consider my atheism to be subordinate to my humanism too. But I don't usually call myself a humanist even. I am one, but that's not an identity that I assert very often. It's called feminism because women are the disadvantaged group. Egalitarian sounds good. Gender egalitarian sounds better. But unfortunately, most of the people I've spoken to who insist that they are an egalitarian rather than a feminist are actually an anti-feminist. They don't really care about equality, or they don't really see the reality the way most people would say it is. They either think that gender inequality doesn't really exist, or it doesn't exist in our culture, or it disadvantages men. Like, they have a very cockeyed view of the playing field, and they say, I'm an egalitarian, not a feminist. So I think feminism is, it's the established term. It's been around for 150, 200 years. It has a track record. It's one of the most transformative human rights movements ever. It's right up there next to the Black Civil Rights Movement in terms of transforming society for the better. And it's a label that we should not be running from, especially if we are atheists and we're activists and we care about promoting equal rights for our group. These human rights groups should not be enemies of each other. We should all be pushing together in the same direction.
Last question.
Yes.
If there was a video or project that would be a good introduction to Steve Shives, to your channel, to what you're about, where would you point them?
I guess I would point them to the An Atheist Reads series. A good jumping on point for a lot of people has been the series I did a few years ago on a book that Frank Turek and Norman Geisler did called I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist. And the reason I point people to that is because that has been a jumping on point for a lot of people already, because one of our fellow YouTubers, DarkMatter2525, shouted out that particular video, you know, 3 years ago, and I still get tons of views and subscriptions from that. So that's as good a jumping on point as any. But the channel is pretty diverse. I mean, the if you're coming for atheist content, that's probably the best place to start, the An Atheist Read series.
And that's our broadcast for tonight. I will see you back here Tuesday of next week as we get into some strange and unusual Christmas traditions you may have never heard of before, a few of which are going to make your jaw drop. That's coming up next week. Have a great one. I'll see you soon on the Thinking Atheist Radio Podcast.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.